And I've had Adam for a couple hours. I've been taking my time with Robert Gover, asking him just about everything I could think of. And, you know, anytime I do that, I realize that there's a ton of you out there with questions that I never even pondered. So we'll get to all of them, as well as some qualifications and things of that nature. We'll talk to Rich, Jimmy, TJ. There'll be room for you two in the final hour this night with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. It is Coast to Coast AM. I am Raleigh James, and let's get to it. We've got Robert Gover on the phone ready to answer all. We'll go to Wild Card 1. TJ's in Tucson. What's up, TJ?
Yes, ma'am. I have three questions for you, for your guests.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my first question would be, because it is a common practice for astrologers to plan events around celestial events, so many things that he mentioned, like the fall of the Berlin Wall, could that have been planned to happen on those dates, only to 20 years later to have the illusion that that it happened because of the celestial bodies or the position of celestial bodies?
Wow, I think you're giving the governments a lot more credit than they deserve, but what do you think, Robert?
Well, Nancy Reagan did plan Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, I understand that. Let's see what Robert has to say about your question one.
Well, again, I think that from astrology, you could learn what periods are, say, in the case of Ronald Reagan, beneficial for him or difficult. And I think Nancy Reagan planned things around that. I don't think the conspiracy can go to the lengths that you are suggesting, though.
Neither do I. What's your next question, TJ?
My next question is, a religion being defined as something you accept as faith, and science something you accept because you can prove it in a laboratory, is astrology a religion, or is it a science?
It's not a religion. I'll tell you that unequivocally. Robert, you go for it.
Well, it's not a science either, because science depends on duplication, and no moment in astrological time, no two moments are ever the same, because the planets keep moving. So every new moon, every lunation occurs with the other planets arranged differently within our solar system and beyond. So that's why astrology is very difficult. I mean, it's impossible to scientificate it.
Yeah,
however,
absolutely.
Within the if you study astrology within the rules of its game, so to speak, in other words, the difference between soccer and football, you can't play football by soccer rules, and you can't do astrology by scientific rules. There's a certain amount of, astrology keeps one humble because the planets are forever surprising us. We say, well, whenever Mercury goes retrograde, such and such happens. And the next thing you know, Mercury goes retrograde and it didn't happen. Well, then we look at the chart and we see that, well, this time when Mercury went retrograde, it was in a good aspect with our other planets. So that's why things didn't go as bad as they usually did when Mercury goes retrograde.
All right, what's your third question?
My third question is, my understanding of the origins of astrology is that it goes all the way back to the Tower of Babel with Nimrod and his mother wife, Semiramis, and that astrology was designed originally to worship the son of God, which was supposed to be Satan. And I was wondering if you could...
That's certainly news to me. What do you think, Robert?
Well, you know, as far as the sun is concerned, in the African religion of Yoruba, the Christos is a god named Obatala. He's the sun god, and he, in terms of the synchronicity between, say, Yoruba religion and Christianity, is the Christ figure. It's the light, enlightenment. And so in that regard, every traditional religion had its Christ figure, if you want to pose the Christian Christ as enlightenment.
All right, TJ, thanks for the call. He's Jimmy's in Brooklyn. Welcome to Coast AM. Jimmy? No, maybe Jimmy's gone. Thought he was east of the Rockies, but let's go to west of the Rockies and talk to Rich in California.
Yeah. A couple of comments and the question. First of all, I don't think the people of this country will allow all of this stuff to happen. I think we will rise up. Unfortunately, if we are lemmings, then we will have a problem to deal with. And the second thing is, I'm not really a big believer in astrology. I remember reading about Edgar Cayce doing some readings for a gentleman by the name of Arthur Lammers, who was into metaphysics. And he wanted, the first question he asked him was all about astrology. And Edgar Cayce pretty much put that down as there was nothing to it. But on the case that it is true, and it may be true, the question I had was related to one of the things you brought up, Raleigh, which was the real estate. I believe Mr. Glover had talked about real estate being something you want to hold on to if the monetary system changes. But if it does, and we get Ameros, and whatever value that is to our U.S. dollar or all the other currencies involved, wouldn't that be the same on a debt situation? If you owe people money, they'd have the same thing happen. So your debt wouldn't really go up, would it? It would be basically the same thing across the board.
Okay, let me interrupt and say that comment was made in the event, and it's very unlikely, I think, but in the event we ever had a pulse bomb or something that wiped out all electronic record keeping. You see, right now today, if you've got money in the bank, most likely all the bank knows about it is on electronic record keeping.
Right.
If there is no electronic record keeping, there's no way to know anything about how much you owe on your house or how much you have in the bank. So
right.
that was the hypothesis. Yeah, that was the hypothesis, not in terms of real estate, cycles.
Because it seems to me, if you have tangibles, whether it's real estate or you load up on gasoline on your place or
right.
Food or whatever else, that would be a lot more valuable at the time something changes, because there's going to be some kind of chaos if things change.
Yeah, that's
I agree.
Material things
yeah.
that are of value. I mean, you know, in other words, you probably... If you had a wagon load of corn, you would probably be able to trade the corn for the stuff you need.
Exactly, yeah. or food, so that you could at least eat if others are starving.
Right.
The only problem comes in loading yourself up on debt, wanting material things, and then if the pulse bomb doesn't come, there's a record of that debt.
Well,
yeah,
I think that what we're heading for
darn if you do, darn if you don't, huh?
is a situation where the debt is so humongous and the income dropping that the debt is going to have to be either defaulted on or restructured in some way. And if it gets restructured, then we're a third world country.
And that's the fear entirely, which, of course, is
yeah.
what will allow for the Amero. All right. Appreciate the call, Rich. Let's see. Is Jimmy east of the Rockies or not in Brooklyn? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. You hear me okay?
There you are, yes.
Okay, Robert, my question. A little while ago, first off, I believe and I know for a fact there's a movement for world government, the NAFTA superhighway, so I have no problem with that. But you seem to imply before that Jerry Rubin and the others, the Chicago 7, not the Chicago 9, that you made it sound comical that they closed down the House Un-American Activities Committee. Am I correct that you appreciated or supported the closing down of our internal investigative defense committees?
Yeah, the House Un-American Activities Committee, yeah, I appreciated them. They ridiculed it to the point where it just never opened again.
No, but I mean, you supported the committees being closed down, is what I'm asking.
Yeah.
Okay, because the House Un-American Activities Committee investigated Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, and foreign communist operation in this country. Because during World War II...
And we see how well they did at it.
Well, they investigated. They're not
all
prosecutors.
Right.
It took a process. It's a whole other story, but they
also destroyed a lot of
good, a great job.
They also destroyed the lives of a lot of Americans who had nothing to do with anything.
Well, millions of lives were lost because of communist activities in this country.
Okay. All right, so we're all agreeing to disagree. Did you have a question about this?
Yes, I want to know how he could support closing down internal
okay.
defense mechanisms.
I think this is not
mass
this is.
Murder.
Thank you, Jimmy. I appreciate the call. This is not the venue for that. All right. I don't know where to go with some of these. We've got Wildcard 3. Todd is in Arizona. Welcome to the welcome to Coast to Coast AM. There you go.
Yes, Raleigh, if you'll allow me to say I'm enamored with your intellect and level of articulation. I want to ask the guest if you see World War One as a land grab for the colonial situation in Africa as the cause, and if you see the Depression and World War Two staged by this Federal Reserve situation, could you see World War II as an attempt by this sort of American organization to restructure the global situation can insert the U.S. as a dominant global power in place of Britain.
Well, before Robert answers, while you're thinking about that, Robert, I have always felt that World War II had to exist since we refused to join the League of Nations in World War I. So World War II got us into the UN. So I certainly think it was more on a global basis than a replacement basis. But what do you think, Robert?
Well, I think World War II, we came out dominant because we had such a powerful industrial plant. And we, got into it. There was a time before we entered World War II when a lot of the country wanted to side with the Nazis. But we eventually went in on the side of the British and the Allies. And we had such a powerful industrial plant that we came out dominant. We came out with the world's most of the gold in the world. And we came out the dominant economy in the world. With being the dominant economy, we had the dominant military.
Appreciate the call. Thanks, Todd. We got George in Manhattan, first-time caller. Welcome to Coast AM.
Yeah, good morning, Raleigh and Robert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to keep my voice down because everybody in the house is sleeping. What I wanted to do is try to verify. I have degrees in theology and geology, master's degree equivalent in geology, but real master's in theology, and in the Gospels. I just want to verify the basis of astrology. There are four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and Luke and Mark were not apostles. They were disciples. Mark of Peter and Luke of Mary, and the story of the birth of Christ and the three kings that were astrologers. I mean, listen to their astrologers, and they came and they found Bethlehem. That was straight from the mouth of Mary to Luke, mm-hmm. And that in Christianity is a profound moment. Now, Mary in our tradition was without flaw. So the truth is symphonic, and that was written by a wonderful cardinal. I mean, well, he was supposed to be a cardinal, but he died before he got the hat. It was the Jesuit philosopher and historian Urs von Balthasar. The truth is symphonic. It goes back to the medicine men in Africa, 6,000 years ago, and it continues to this day. You know, the Creator has given everybody signs and directions so that they can see what is coming, and the truth is symphonic. That's my whole idea.
Okay.
And it fits with astrology and every other way that the Creator has of helping us to understand where we are, where we've been, and where we're going.
All right, George, thank you for calling.
My favorite astrology mentor used to say that astrology is God's newsletter. It's difficult to read, but once you get the hang of it, it's very helpful.
And it's also interesting, put you on the spot with a lot of questions, and astrology doesn't do those kind of answers. It, as I was saying in the first hour, it can't tell you if you're going to marry Becky or if you're going to move to Alaska. It's going to give you the indications of potentials.
And astrology is also another take on reality. In other words, if you remember the story about the blind men groping the elephant, and everyone felt a different part of the elephant, and everyone was sure that his take on the elephant was absolutely true, and they all got into a big fight about it.
Exactly.
So astrology and science have two different parts of the elephant groped.
We've got Sherry, west of the Rockies in Phoenix. Welcome to Coast AM.
Thank you. My question was about types of astrology. You had said earlier that our astrology is perhaps not as accurate as Eastern astrology.
As a predictive tool, I find that Eastern astrology or Indian Hindu astrology is more used as a prediction tool with accuracy. That's just my opinion.
Okay, Hindu astrology. So that would be different than like the Chinese, you're born under the sign of the tiger or the horse or whatever.
Yes.
The Chinese
is not astrology.
Design that, I mean, everybody maps the heavens differently.
Uh-huh. Right.
The ancient people, the Hindus, the Chinese, and the Babylonians, we used the Babylonian mapping, which then became the longitude and latitude of, you know, our navigational system.
Okay.
To map the heavens.
Okay.
And the Mayan mapped it. The Mayans mapped it differently still.
But Hindu astrology would be Vedic astrology if you wanted to read about it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we'll try to have a Vedic astrologer on some night to talk about it. It's a totally different system.
Right.
With some commonalities, but I think...
Yeah, there's a lot of commonalities, but it's a different emphasis.
Right. And Western astrology, I think, without a doubt, is a better descriptive tool when we're talking about individuals.
Uh-huh.
But when you're talking about events happening to individuals, I think you might find more accuracy in Vedic astrology, but that's just my take on it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. One way to boost the economy, Robert, is to have a war.
And yeah, that's something that most people don't understand, because of the way money is issued into our society by the bankers of the Fed, who are a small clique and have a private little corporation of their own. They lend money to the rest of the society, and the way they make most of their profits and profit their good buddies in the military industrial complex is with war. So wars become the big money maker, the big money bonanza.
Sure, it's done very well. And this leads into everybody's question is, and we're horrified by the thought, many of us, are we likely to invade Iran?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think that would be totally impractical.
And astrologically speaking, you don't see any of the war indications in the next year?
Well, not at this time. I think Iran and the United States are on a collision course for the future. For sure, but I don't know that it will break out in a shooting war. And if it does, it seems to me it'll involve Israel more than the United States.
Do you see anything with regard to the Mideast that way in the say next decade?
Well, I think that what we're looking for, what's coming up in the next decade for the United States, is going to mean. We won't have the military might, because we won't have the economic power to put behind it, and therefore we're going to have to pull in our horns and, not invade so many other countries and not try to... Plus the fact that other countries are now dumping the dollar and selling oil for euros and rubles and yuan, and, the United States is poised to have a big money problem because of this.
Now, of course, when we talk about that, there are many people who say, well, why don't they just borrow more from the Fed? And this gets into the heart of it again with regard to the Federal Reserve Go ahead.
It does, but if the Arabs are selling money, oil for, say, euros,
right,
then we're going to have to pay a $1.49 or so per 1 euro. That's going to be a premium of almost 50% on the cost of gas for us.
Now, when you bring up oil, that's another thing that I wonder if it can be seen astrologically. There are many of us who feel that our dependence on fossil fuels is outmoded anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So when I come back, I'll ask you what the likelihood is that we will, in fact, I won't say discover anything else, because it's likely that we've long ago discovered it and the major corporations have buried it, but likely that something will emerge that we will be able to remove ourselves from the oil pipeline. We'll find out that. Robert Gover is my guest, www.robertgover.com. And Time and Money, the Economy and the Planets is the book, and a good read it is. We'll continue with the final half hour of your questions with me, Raleigh James, on Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, and I've got Robert Gover with me, who's been here all evening, and we left him there with regard to what's really going on with our dependence on oil. On the one hand, we are in a situation where we stop our explorative drilling. We do everything we can to make ourselves totally reliant On the other hand, you have to think that something has happened by now that would end the dependency in general, whether here or abroad. So we'll find out what's up with that astrologically. We'll also take your calls in the final half hour with Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. It is Raleigh James on Coast to Coast AM. We've got Robert Gover, and so I asked you the question and then, of course, said, well, we'll do that in minutes. Well, the minutes have passed. Here we are. What's the answer with regard to our oil dependence?
Well, I think the world is moving toward a clash between the medieval assumptions and beliefs our economy has been based on and the political rise of democracy, which has, you know, been very rapid in the past century or so. And I think that political rise of democracy is going to, once unleashed, is going to bring out a lot of ingenuity and new ways and means of powering our, you know, of finding energy sources is going to arise through that. But right now, it's the servant of the medieval assumptions.
Okay, so the bottom line is, until there's political upheaval, we're not going to see what's out there as far as different technologies anyway.
Right.
Got it. West of the Rockies, Mary in Salt Lake City. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Raleigh and Robert. Uh-huh. I have a question. I'm always in the wrong century at the wrong time or something, but right now we seem to have some cash. And I was wondering, this may sound un-American, I hope not, but if you were going to buy property in a country, would it be best to buy in America or in another country?
Oh, well, that would depend. If I could do an astrological chart in your case, a lot would depend on your situation.
Okay.
I know one couple who are on their way to moving down to Argentina. Her parents came from Argentina. So she, in a way, she's going back home. I know of another couple.
Really American. So.
She's sixth generation Mexican American, but she and her gringo husband are making plans to move down to Mexico and settle somewhere in Mexico. They're looking for a place right now. And but on the other hand, I know of a lot of people who are making plans to have land that is buildable that they can do a lot with. Push come to shove.
Okay, here's my two cents on this too, and that's, unless you really know the culture and the laws of another country, you have issues such as nationalization. You could buy something as a foreigner and they could decide to nationalize the land and take it from you with no compensation.
Right.
It can be a great gamble, not to mention the political and economic upheaval. So when you're saying we're very American, I would think that your best interest would be to find land that could be self-sustaining, something where you could grow a few crops in the event there really was a problem. You know, I don't think I'd go into a homeowner development where there were, you know, CCNRs that were going to stop you from doing that.
I agree with that.
Right.
So I would try to be as self-sufficient as I could on land that you knew here. Just, you know, just the concept of I'm very American and I don't know, you're asking for an awful lot of variables when you go to a foreign country.
I understand that, and I realize I may need to have a private chart done. It was a overall question. And
I would say stick with the devil you know.
I love you both.
Thanks for calling.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right, Wild Card 5, Jay is in Pennsylvania. Hello, Jay.
I was going to run a story by you guys to see what you think about it. Heard from a grandpa of mine, and was just going to see. It relates to currency in general. So real quick, it's someone who took in, at the dawn of their civilization, there was two of them, and the one took in decided to pick up something from the ground, just a lump of this rock, and call it worth $1 billion and hid it away and made currency, and the other guy believed him. And as generations went on, everything that they did in the society ended up being dependent on this currency that was truly worth nothing, as he just announced it was worth $1 billion and then hid it away. But everybody believed it, and that's what made them keep going and keep, you know, believing in it and working based on this currency that he made. And when you think about how our society is today, what we do with gold, we take it out and clean it up and put it into gold bars, and then we have it back in the ground. Essentially like a Fort Knox or something like that.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't sure if you did, would you think a perspective like that, or you know, realizing that would change much in society, or would it, I don't know, maybe benefit to know that, you know, it might truly be worth whatever we're believing in it. You know, it's really the belief that's worth something, and not necessarily what we think of as the money part of it.
Yeah, I think it's our belief in gold that makes it of intrinsic value, as it's called.
Or anything else.
Yeah, but right now it seems to me that oil is the more current measure of any currency. The, you know, what you pay for the oil, a barrel of oil, in any given currency.
But it's all about belief. Everything in this existence is predicated upon root assumptions that we believe.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to hear what you guys would think about that. Appreciate
Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. Let's see. Wildcard 3 has Jan in Brooklyn. Welcome to Coast AM. Hello, Jan.
Hi.
There you are. Where were you?
Hello?
Yeah, where were you?
Brooklyn. My question is, what does he think about the viruses with astrology? I'm really scared about they're going to put viruses in the system and everything.
Viruses of? Are you talking about computer viruses, or are you
talking about you know
in vaccinations?
Viruses, you know, make people sick.
All right,
I'm worried about that.
So really, you're at the heart of eugenics. Are they going to be killing us all?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I'm
not a new theory, and it wasn't limited to the Nazis. So what do you think, Robert?
Well, that's a thorny question. I wouldn't put it past the present people who dominate the world to do that. But, they have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I think it's a... Some evil genius could come up with something like that, I guess, and, wreck havoc in the world's population. But I don't think that they would do that, because especially viruses travel and mutate and change. If they loose the virus into the general population, it could come around and get them.
If you're interested in this topic, Jan, the latest movie, Endgame, from Alex Jones, has a section devoted to eugenics and those who want to wipe out 95% of the population. But if you wondered why they're not doing it yet, I think Robert hit on it. It's not as easily controllable as you'd expect.
What about the terrorists?
What about terror? Oh, you're thinking maybe that terrorists would resort to... biochemical warfare,
yeah,
and this kind of problem
stuff.
With regard to, well, I looking at it, because obviously I don't have my Miss Cleo hat on, and I don't think Robert does either. Looking at it astrologically, is there any way to find plagues and things of that nature, Robert?
That's usually ruled by Neptune.
Yeah.
The scare of the Asian flu recently.
Right, right.
I did a study on that, and I found out that if we were going to get hit by it, it would have come last August.
Okay.
According to the astrological history of previous pandemics.
Good deal.
But it didn't come, and I'm damn glad.
Yeah.
And it.
Got it. All right, AJ, you're in Los Angeles, Wildcard 1. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, welcome. I have a comment and then a question real quickly. I believe that we are so far gone as a country economically, morally, spiritually, politically, and socially that we are in the last stages before a major event, as Tommy Franks predicted, would happen that would change the face of America and end our Constitution and our way of life. And having said that, I believe that we have one hope and one hope only, and that is for us individually as well as collectively to turn our lives over to the supreme power of the universe and ask him for salvation.
Okay.
For our country and
ourselves. Well, Yeah, and I understand where you're going with that astrologically, but what's the question?
Okay, now the question is, does your guest see a imminent world war possibly on the horizon with China as our main adversary, which hates our guts and is, I think, looking for an opening to take advantage of us?
I don't see it, but what do you see, Robert?
I think, as I read the coming decade, China and the United States and France and Israel are going to be hit the hardest with this Uranus-Pluto square. So I think China and the United States are going to be so busy taking care of economic travails of their own that they're not going to, you know, have a thirst to go to war.
And as much as they may hate us, I think they're also absolutely dependent on us. When we look at the growth they've had, we're still the buyers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, appreciate that, AJ. David's a first-time caller in Maryland. Welcome to Coast to Coast AM.
Hi, Raleigh. First, I wanted to say thank you very much for your fine work and all the radio work you do.
Thanks
for calling. I had two comments and one question. My first comment was that in my research that I found that the end of the Mayan calendar really isn't the end of the Mayan calendar. It's more like the end of a millennium, or actually the second millennium. They call it a reed. Mm-hmm. So the end of this next millennium can be the second reed. That's what I found so far.
Mm-hmm.
And my second comment is that I hope that we all together, you know, as Americans, you know, end the struggle of duality, come to a neutral position, and realize that we can all help each other to get through this problem. And my question for Robert is, do you see Earth changes at all with your astrology, if there's any at all?
Yeah, I see the possibility, the distinct probability that, especially in America, we're gonna become very cooperative with each other the way we were back in the 1800s. You know, necessity is going to breed cooperation. And I think it's going to be more community to community and within communities. And I think we're going to become more interdependent on each other the way we were when we were building the best and, the richest country on the planet.
Do you see anything like earthquakes or tsunamis or, you know, other untoward weather events that would create that?
That seems to be building up, you know, with I'm not totally sold on climate change, but it sure looks that way right now. I mean, you know, the case for climate change has been made, and it's a good one. It's hard to refute. And along with climate change comes horrendous weather events like Katrina.
Climate change can be cyclical, much more, you know, historically speaking, than man-made.
Right.
And certainly if the cycles are there, that would show, but that would be worldwide. It wouldn't really be on any individual country chart.
Exactly. Well, and then the position of Pluto right now, conjunct the galactic center, is a 245-50-year cycle. So
yeah, that's interesting.
Two cycles of Pluto ago, the Americas were really rearranged tremendously because of the way the Native Americans had shaped the land and the landscape and what they had done with it and how they depended. They were more integrated into the landscape. The Indians in North America used to have controlled burns, I learned from a book called 1491.
They were probably much more in line with nature than the European man ever has been in our existence.
And they kind of lived in such a supermarket of stuff. I mean, they really didn't need to do much trading because there was such an abundance of food for them.
Sure.
Just a little bit of gardening, and they could grow plenty to see them through the winter, and they had abundance of game for meat and fish.
All right.
So they ate well, they lived well, and they had a, you know, thriving economy that was dependent on Mother Nature, was the big capitalist.
Wildcard 5, Ron is in Toronto. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi. Hi.
Hey, Ron.
I'm really happy to have an opportunity to speak to you. Number one, please don't take it personally. but the Prime Minister of Canada is no longer Martin.
No, of course not. It's Harper. But when the agreement was signed,
right,
it was Martin. Somebody else had written about that. And I'm saying, now, wait a minute. Fox is also not the president of Mexico anymore, but no one's bothered to notice that one. But this was when the SPP was signed. It was Bush, Fox, and Martin putting their John Hancocks on it.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. I apologize. But what really distresses me is that it seems that America thinks that automatically Canada is going to join into this agreement.
Oh, no, it's not what America thinks. America doesn't want to be in it any more than Canadians want to be in it. The theory is that the fix is in.
There's a better chance that Canada doesn't have to belong or will not belong than the American choice.
Well,
we Canadians are dismayed because we feel that we're really friends of the Americans. I know I have a lot of relatives in this
state
and a lot of friends that I visit.
Yes, Ron.
We're dismayed. We feel that the American government has become corrupt.
All right. Firstly, no more corrupt than many of the governments. Remember that when that agreement was signed, when Martin was the president, he was in the thick of it, too. Now, many of these SPP meetings and other things that have been going on with regard to the North American Union have been held in Canada, such as Banff last year and the big seminar. This is not about how the Canadian people feel any more than it's about how the American people feel. Those who are watching this believe the fix is in, regardless of how anybody feels. The average American doesn't want it any more than the average Canadian.
Well, but Canadians really don't feel that there's a fix in. I know,
because you're not getting it on the news.
We work with you, but I don't think Canada would ever enter into it.
Well, I certainly hope you're right. Time will tell. But the reason Canadians don't speak about it, and believe me, I'm sitting right here with you, Ron, you don't hear it on the news. You don't hear it in talk radio, in part because of hate laws. It's just not as publicized. But I appreciate the call. When you listen to talk radio in America, you will get things you don't get in other countries because other countries prohibit that. And, of course, Robert, that's the question. Are we going to get to a point where the speech is prohibited in America?
I wouldn't be surprised, but I hope not.
Well, I do too. But
I think we're a more, I should say, when push comes to shove, Americans push back harder than most people. But they need to be pushed to the wall before they really push back.
All righty. East of the Rockies, Roberts in Florida. Welcome to Coast AM.
Good morning. Thank you both for elucidating on the world problems. Some time ago, President Roosevelt left us with a legacy. He hired or commissioned one of his military intelligence officers by the name of John Beatty.
I hate to do this to you, but I got 10 seconds.
Yes. Well, the book he left us with is The Iron Curtain Over America, The Iron Curtain Over America by John Beatty, and the book has been burned everywhere and out of every library.
Well, thanks for the information. Hopefully we'll all check it out. I appreciate that. And my special thanks to you, Robert, for spending 3 hours with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Good deal. And, of course, my thanks to Kiris Coburn, Wayne Roberts, Gina Yates, Gina Salvati, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Ross Mitchell, Lisa Lyon, Tom Danheiser, Trevor Oliver, George Norrie, Sean Compton, and especially to you for listening to me. Till next time, that's a wrap.